In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
South Dakota artists are stepping up to lead, from the Black Hills to Vermilion to Sioux Falls. From STPB, today is Thursday, September 4th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we cross the state looking for the next generation of leaders in the arts. We'll meet an award-winning photographer whose commercial photo shoot highlights the warmth and connection of a South Dakota night. And we'll ask about his journey from submarine periscope repair to adventures in film development. That's coming a bit later in the hour. We'll meet a theater professional who brings the world's biggest shows to South Dakota, but whose favorite role is when art springs from the roots of our home state soil. Plus, a new vision for art from the sacred Black Hills. That's coming up after the news. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The arts scene is alive and thriving in the Black Hills of South Dakota. The Rapid City Arts Council has selected a new executive director to lead them. Travis Dewis steps into the role of executive director. He joined me on Zoom for a conversation about his role at the council. Tell us a little bit about why you wanted to do this new work.
Absolutely. It's a really exciting organization. I've always admired the work of the Rapid City Arts Council and the work that they host within the DAL. I grew up within this community, and so I grew up, attending events here at the Rapid City Arts Council, and so I've always admired it as an organization. And, when the position came open, at first I didn't think I was going to apply for it, and then a couple months went by, and I thought that this would be a good time for a transition, so here we are now. The position has been open for close to 8 months, so there's a lot to get done, but I'm happy to be doing it.
Yeah, and artist Marty Tubles, when we talked to him last, was devoted to making sure that they found the right person to lead the organization forward, and that was really an act of service for him to do the leadership in the interim and make sure there was a good fit. In your conversations with him, what did you sense that he and the board were looking for to bring the Rapid City Arts Council into the future?
I think one of the main qualifiers that they were looking for, and something that I view as the most broad scope of my position, is to have somebody that's going to bring all of the stakeholders together, all of the stakeholders of the Rapid City Arts Council. And there are a lot of stakeholders. There are individuals like Marty who are working artists, who are partner artists within the organization. There's the city of Rapid City. There's the constituents of our programming. And the list goes on and on. And I think having somebody that can, really foster all of these relationships and help bring everyone to the table to take the Rapid City Arts Council and the DAL to the next 50 years. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary. And, being such a community-minded organization, I think that is more than likely the most pivotal thing that they were looking for. And I know that I've worked a lot with stakeholders in the past through my previous positions. And it's something that I really enjoy doing. Talking to your audience here, for example, is a step in the right direction for that. So,
yeah. But what are you sensing that the community in Rapid City and beyond in the Black Hills is really interested in, optimistic about, or critical of? But, what are some of the key things that keep surfacing that would intersect with the mission of the Rapid City Arts Council?
Yeah, I think that the Native arts are a huge aspect to this conversation. We have a ton of Native working artists in Rapid City itself and in the Black Hills in general. And, so far in the past, we have a very heavy tourism trade within South Dakota. And a lot of times that these artists can I'm not sure how to phrase it, but a lot of times these artists can kind of fall under the radar, or they have in the past. And we're lucky now to have organizations like Racing Magpie and some other folks who do really great work in this realm. But I think that going forward in the Rapid City Arts Council, directly working with these native artists to for programming that they want to see in the future, and really bringing their work to the forefront in a lot of aspects, while also serving all of our other artists in the Black Hills, is going to be very important. And I think that I see a lot of excitement for the Native arts in Rapid City, and I think that there's a lot of room left to grow in that area, and I'm really looking forward to working on that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit and go back in your bio a bit and talk about your time with Tim Gallego and Native Son News. He'd been on this show a few times, and it was just a great honor for me to really interview him. You got to work with him on a daily basis. Tell me a little bit about that time with Tim Gallego and some of the things that you learned that really you'll never forget.
Tim was an amazing mentor of mine. I worked with him for a number of years. And some things that I really, things that I think of often when I think of Tim, I have a degree in history and I'm from South Dakota. And so a lot of the historical traumas are not foreign to me. It's not like I just moved to Rapid City and I don't know what happened at Wounded Knee, for example. But Tim did a really amazing job for me as a non-Native person working within the realm of a Native newspaper. Tim did a really good job of, really driving home these historical traumas. He went to boarding school, and he was here throughout a lot of the very turbulent activism years with AIM and everything like that. And Tim had pretty controversial opinions about some of these things. And I think, in that conversation, he really instilled in me that there is not one viewpoint that fits all. Tim obviously didn't speak for all of the native peoples of the region. And not that I was expecting him to, but I think he really highlighted the contrast of opinions very well for me. But he could also really drive home the singularity of it as well. Tim was he was an amazing gentleman, and I miss him quite a lot. So I believe it's been 3 years now since he passed, but he was a great person and a hard worker too.
Yeah, that hard work definitely comes to mind. You mentioned studying history in South Dakota. Were there areas that resonated with you as a student?
Yeah, absolutely. My final to get my history degree, my capstone project was actually about environmental history. So talking about uranium mining in the Black Hills, and then the larger part of that conversation was the sacredness of the Black Hills. So not only uranium mining, but other aspects as well, how Bear Butte was being treated as a tourist site over the years and the planned development of that. And so, it was really focused on like not in my backyard movement, but more from a native, indigenous religious perspective. And that really opened my eyes quite a bit as well. And I think Tim was able to appreciate a lot of that too.
Yeah. Then you also studied at the master's level about sustainable tourism. So let's talk a little bit about over-tourism, tourism that works for the people who live in the places that other people come visit. What are some ways that education might intersect with the mission of the Rapid City Arts Council and the DAL now?
I think there's a lot of room for growth when it comes to the DAL and sustainable tourism. Right now, a lot of the people who are coming through our galleries are from these three zip codes in Rapid City, which those are the people that we're really trying to meet. But there is definitely room for growth for getting the work of these artists in the galleries, in our gift shop, in front of people who are here on a very short-term basis. And, you know, right now I think that's the conversation that is going on in my mind, is first of all getting those people interested in coming here. How do we do that? The staff here, we just got linked up with Black Hills and Badlands, which is a great tourism destination management organization. And so that conversation has already been happening, you know, getting more people through the door. And then over tourism, you know, we are on this like cusp, or we have been in the Black Hills, of, you know, over tourism. And I haven't seen a lot of conversation about it. You know, it is a huge economic driver within the state. But just being a resident of the Black Hills for my entire life, I've definitely noticed the changes over the years. And, you know, within the downtown ecosystem of tourism, I think the DAL and the Arts Council has a larger role to play. And maybe it can be the role of alleviating some of these pressures on other areas. But that's just something that, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it with other tourism partners like Black Hills and Badlands or Visit Rapid City.
Yeah, some of these big picture conversations that, how long have you been in this job now?
Oh, let's see, like 10 days.
Yeah.
Maybe
see,
less.
There are a lot of people who would not, you know, engage in sort of that big picture thinking in the first 10 days. They would just say, I'm still learning the ropes. So I really appreciate your willingness to sort of envision. And I also want to hold space for the fact that everything might change in the next 10 days for you, because the job is so new. But it's wonderful to hear the kind of leadership and perspective that you're bringing, you know, from the beginning, as we follow that, you know, throughout your tenure. What do you think the role of like a vibrant arts, you know, ecosystem can mean for the people? You know, you mentioned all the different stakeholders. So now I'm kind of focusing at the, you know, the gallery goers, but then also the people who engage in your programming, and just the everyday citizen who's not an art, who's not art making, but is interacting with the messages and the work and the techniques that these artists are bringing, which is world class, by the way, in the Black Hills. You hate to have like too many people discover the secret, but also I think every like high end collector in the world should know the kind of artists and the work they're creating. What's in it for a community to have a vibrant place where working artists are supported to do the next thing that they might see is their form of expression?
Yeah, there's so many ways that we can take that question and the answer, particularly because the arts really do intersect, you know, every single part of the community. And I'll say like one thing that I'm very excited about, and I talked about this with the board a little bit, is that, you know, the arts really have the opportunity to make Rapid City an even greater community than it already is. And the Rapid City Arts Council has been doing this work for over 50 years. So this isn't like a new conversation, but I believe that we can continue to take it to new heights. Rapid City is, you know, very racially charged place. You know, it is a larger border town when it comes to Native and non-Native relationships. And that can be a difficult bridge to gap in a lot of scenarios. And I think that the arts has the ability to bridge that gap in many ways. It's obviously not going to solve everything overnight, but it keeps the conversation going in things like that. You know, things that are hard to talk about, the arts bring community members from diverse backgrounds to the table so that they can see from another person's point of view. And that's just so important to do and to continue to keep doing. Yeah. There's a lot to talk about there and a lot to unpack. But yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah. And there's a sense of trying to find that place where, when are the arts the really the only place where this can be addressed in a certain way versus some people's desire to go to a gallery and escape from, you know, certain things where they think, I just want to look at some art, then want to feel better. And yet there's also this role of the art. And that can be a really important role, you know, for various forms of art to provide for people, is a time to sort of be in a space outside of whatever might be happening in your life. but then also addressing this responsibility, even maybe to address these harder things that we deal with every day. That's a forever conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And luckily, you know, for those people who just want, you know, to participate in the arts as a form of escapism or just personal self-reflection and expression, we're lucky to have a lot going on here. You know, it's not like every exhibition is dealing with, you know, our area's deepest issues. Okay. It certainly isn't. We have the whole spectrum, and we truly do have something for everyone.
So. Yeah. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. If you've seen a theatrical performance in Sioux Falls lately, the production likely has Bob Wendland's fingerprints all over it. He is a prolific local actor, entertainer, director, and theater manager. He co-founded the Goodnight Theater Collective, where he has served as artistic director since 2016. His new role at the Washington Pavilion deepens his connection to the East River theater scene. The new director of performances joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls.
A little over 25 years ago now, when the Pavilion opened, we were doing some, we were doing some world music. We were doing, I say we like I was there. I wasn't there back then, but it feels like I was. Yeah. I've been there long enough. We weren't doing a ton of Broadway back then, yeah. But over time, I mean, right now we're about to launch our season with Back to the Future in October, mid-October, and we're doing 8 performances of it, which, isn't that wild?
Wow.
It's crazy, yeah. And so, in a market our size, isn't doing full week runs of Broadway, and we've been doing them for a few years now. We don't do not every show is a full week run. But for, some insider industry knowledge, we go to conferences pretty often and people are blown away at what we're able to do right here in Sioux Falls. And it is 100% because of our supporters. It's because of our patrons and our guests who show up time and time again and show people in New York and in LA and in these like big major markets that we love the arts. We want to see live entertainment at its best right here in our backyard. And so, we've grown quite a bit in just over 2 decades from doing a few like international and, you know, global artists in our venue to now having a really like solid 6-title Broadway series as well as many other, you know, national and global artists being presented on our stage.
So backstage, you got to bring a DeLorean in, right?
there is a DeLorean.
DeLorean
involved.
Must fly in some capacity through the theater magic, which brings me to the production team and loading and out, unloading and figuring out what can be done and what can't be done.
Exactly.
How is this building set up?
Yeah.
And was it set up like that for 25 years ago with that kind of vision, or has it sort of grown? Like, are there things that you say, well, now we need a trap door or now we need a this?
Yeah.
Help us understand how that works on the circuit.
Definitely. Again, I mean, I wasn't there way back when they were having these conversations about what the building would look like. But one of the driving factors was that this was going to be a home for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah.
And so many artists, orchestra artists and really other artists as well, any performing artists, so many of them come to our venue and they perform, whether it's, you know, dance or singing or, you know, instrumentation or performance of any kind. And one of the things that most consistently we hear about after the fact is how incredible the acoustics are.
Yeah.
And that is all thanks to the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra feeling really, you know, passionate about that component of the building. And so the theater itself, I mean, if you've ever been in the theater, you know how just like breathtakingly beautiful it is. We have the quartzite along the walls, and we've made a lot of enhancements from the like technical backstage side of things over the years as well. But we've got a huge loading dock behind the stage.
Yeah.
And so that's where, Back to the Future, is bringing 11 semi-trucks full of production for their show because it is just massive. It's one of the biggest shows we've had at the Pavilion. And so they're going to bring those 11 semi-trucks, and everything that's in those semi-trucks has to fit onto our stage. And so we have this huge loading dock that everything will move through and get organized through and go to where it needs to go. Some things will go four stories up, well, really five stories up into the catwalks, and, you know, we'll have lighting up there, and we'll have lots of things flying in and out in our huge fly system. We'll use our smaller theater anytime a big Broadway show like this comes through just for storage, because everything comes out of a crate and then those crates have to go somewhere. So our smaller theater is on hold for every Broadway show just so that we can put boxes in there, essentially. So it's, I mean, it's a major undertaking every time we have one of these Broadway shows come through. But honestly, like anytime we have a rock concert come through or a different, you know, music concert or performance experience come through our doors, I mean, they're going through that same loading dock. They're using the same equipment. And so it is kind of fun to have such a wide range of entertainment that we get to put on that stage and on all of our stages.
Yeah.
And they all get to use the same stuff. So some, you know, Broadway tourists coming in and performing on the same stage with the same equipment as, you know, a concert association show that's coming through town or something like that.
As, as an elementary school student who's in a spotlight theater
Lincoln,
production.
Lincoln Band performs on our stage, and a lot of the dance galleries in town and studios in town perform on our stage. So, it's cool.
So what kind of vision are you bringing to the job in the future? As you look at, you know, stepping in, and you said, you know, inheriting this wonderful, you know, this wonderful venue with this great history and a great team. But still, you get to lead it into the future. What are some of the areas for growth or opportunity that you see?
I love that question. The team is phenomenal. I'm just like so humbled to get to work with the team that I get to work with. And we have some positions open. And so that is kind of where I'm starting, is making sure that the people that join this team understand that, like, we know what we're doing. And we want you to be a part of that and bring your knowledge and your expertise for sure. But, like, this is a solid team. And then beyond that, once we are rebuilt and once we're moving forward in earnest, I come from a background of community and like grassroots art. And so moving into this position that is very focused and driven on theater as a business and entertainment as a business and making a budget feel balanced and make it work by the end of the year. That's obviously very important, and that's something that I have to continue to do. But I think the Pavilion's done a really exceptional job over the last over two decades, of establishing itself as a really like constant and consistent source of high-quality, world-class entertainment. Yeah. And I don't want to lose that, but I want to shift the focus a little bit to what's happening right here in our own communities. Like I mentioned, a lot of local groups, whether it's a high school band or a theater program in town, or, I mean, the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. I mean, so many of those groups have such like deep local roots, and they're choosing our venues to showcase their talents on. And so I want to do a lot in the near future to help champion those groups and to help find more talent in our community and the surrounding area and give them a platform to perform and to entertain and to do what they do best. Because it's so important to me, and quite frankly, it's what has motivated me to get where I am today.
Bernie Hunhoff with South Dakota Magazine, 40 years, was on the show today, and he talked about starting his magazine and thinking, why can't we have a world-class magazine in South Dakota? Like, doesn't South Dakota deserve a regional magazine that is of the absolute highest quality, and it's one of the nation's best? So why can't we have the absolute best performing arts venue, performances, audiences, community of anywhere else in the world? So getting the people around you, making sure you have that team. You get to go to New York and go to find that inspiration off Broadway or on Broadway. And it's about, those trips are about more than picking a show. So I imagine you going to different shows and saying, this one will do really well in South Dakota. We're going to, you know, that bottom line, this is what people are going to, you know, show up for. Also, though, the inspiration that you might pick up from even a show that maybe you can't bring to South Dakota might be like, how do we do that here?
Absolutely.
Can you think of an example of a show that you've seen in Broadway where you came back to a local production and said, we can incorporate that, or this inspired something locally?
Yeah, I would actually say, so I love going to New York. I love visiting New York. I love getting to see shows on Broadway. My husband and I are actually going next week just for fun because we love it so much. But what inspires me most on these work trips when I go to New York, or in a few weeks I'm going to Milwaukee for a more regional conference.
Okay.
So we go to a lot of these bigger cities. And to me, what's most inspiring and what I strive to bring back to my work after a conference like that isn't what's happening on Broadway. It's what's happening off Broadway. It's what's happening in like the little, you know, hotel room or conference room, you know, showcase floors of someone doing something so new and so fresh and so interesting that I don't frankly know if it'll do well in Sioux Falls or not, but I want to bring it here, and I want to find a way to get it here, whether it's from that artist or an artist that's already here doing that and just hasn't had the platform to do it on the Somerville stage or the Belba stage or something big and, for lack of a better word, professional level, as the theaters and the venues that we have access to right here in the city, either at the Pavilion or the Orpheum Theater Center.
Yeah. One of the things is, and I think most people know, my daughter lives out in New York, and so I travel there fairly often and see shows. And the thing that I always want to bring back is the hospitality aspect, where you come into a Broadway show and there's those little creative touches.
That
could apply to, the pheasant opener. Yeah, that could apply to a restaurant in, a smaller town.
Absolutely.
The way that people are thinking through what is the visitor experience to this and how can I make it like super connected. We saw Cabaret. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then, during the intermission, the phone like rings at your table and you pick it up and someone talks to you.
Yeah, very immersive.
A wonderful, crazy, immersive sort of thing. How does that apply to a different industry or a different show or a different moment in the culture? I think that's fascinating to think about.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a guest services manager right now. Her name is Candice Balkovich, and she is just top of her game. She's not on my team, so I can't take credit for how awesome she is in any way, shape, or form. But that's, literally her job at the Pavilion is to make sure that when you walk in the doors, and even, when you park your car, your entire experience at the Pavilion is flawless, and you feel welcome there, and you are having the time of your life there, and you're enjoying the show and the work that's being done by the actors on stage and behind the scenes, certainly, but everything else is curated in such a way that makes you feel like you're at home, like you're enjoying yourself.
So the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra, Giants in the Earth,
is
another example of, I remember being in the theater, and it's a cultural moment where you were in, and I was tired that week, and you know sometimes you get ready for a show and you're like, okay, I've worked so hard this week, can I just go home? And then you go to the theater and you step in and you sit down and you're like, man, am I glad I was here for the moment.
Yeah. I feel that very personally because I work in that building.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes I will very intense. So I'm a subscriber to our very own Broadway series, specifically for the reason that it guarantees me 6 nights of not being on the clock and just like sitting in the theater and getting to experience what, our team does so well. But there are definitely weeks where I'm just like, okay, it's Thursday night. I'm going to go to this show because I have tickets to the show. I would rather be at home in my pajamas on the couch, but I have these tickets. And every single time, I'm sitting in my seat.
Yeah.
I'm watching this performance unfold, and I'm just like swept up in the magic of it because there is that element for me of just like pride, of knowing that like, this is a venue that I like pour a lot of myself into, but even more so the team that I get to work with did this. Like they pulled this off. Without them, none of this magic would be happening in my community. And that, that's a really special
thing. Remind me what town you're from?
I'm from Arlington, South Dakota. Yes.
So for the kids in Arlington, for the kids in Milbank, for the kids, in South Dakota who want to live here, even if they want to travel the world. And so much of what we do in South Dakota supports agriculture.
Yeah.
Now, also the Pavilion, of course, supports tourism, and that's a big industry as well. But there is a room for people in the arts.
For sure.
In all these small towns and in our bigger cities. You found one pathway.
Yeah.
Do you have advice for your younger self or the kid who's listening now who's like, man, Sioux Falls is pretty far away. I don't know if my parents are going to buy me that ticket to Back to the Future. What would you say?
Yeah, I'm going to steal some advice, actually, from my college professor. So I went to Augustana College at the time, university now. Yep. That dates me a little bit. But so Julia Peshaud Bennett was my acting instructor there. She was my acting professor.
She was my speech professor.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great human.
Thanks, Julia.
Really wonderful human. And she would always say, make art where you are. And for the first 2 years of college, I didn't really understand what that meant. And then I visited New York because I had a friend who had like graduated and went out there and was living out there and trying to like
the dream.
Make a life for themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, live the dream. And almost instantly, I realized this is not for me. I really love visiting New York. It is something that I really enjoy to do and I try to do often. But I knew very quickly that that was not the life for me. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I didn't have to spend a lot of money and time and energy and effort in like moving out there and realizing that it wasn't a good fit. But ultimately what it did is it shook me enough to realize like, that's what she meant. Make art where you are. Right now I'm in Sioux Falls. I've always been in South Dakota. Like this is my home and I don't have to rebuild my home somewhere else just to be a theater artist, just to be an arts professional.
Yeah.
There is art everywhere. This state is so art focused and maybe sometimes it's hard to see that, at least on the surface, but you peel away one layer, you like dust off the veneer of really anything in this state and there's art underneath. I mean, we love art in all of its forms and the people of the state, I think a lot of them maybe wouldn't consider themselves artists. But when you really start to peel that back, we're all artists. I mean, whether we like to sing or dance or paint or draw or whatever, like, or write, whatever it is. I mean, there is so much art tied to our culture in this state. And we're just not boisterous about it. You know, we're not boastful about it.
Yeah.
But it's here. And so I guess that's my advice. That's the really roundabout way of saying, like, you can make art where you are, whether that's Arlington, South Dakota, or Milbank, South Dakota, or West River, East River. I mean, art is everywhere. You just have to figure out what it is about that that drives you, that motivates you to make a living doing it, to wake up every day and decide, yeah, I still want to do this, and I want to do this forever.
That's Bob Wendland. He's the new director of performances at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Imagine the color navy, a cool, deep, and dark navy stretched across the top of a photograph. As your sight line moves down, the navy becomes progressively lighter purple. Then, at the horizon line, 3/4 of the way down, it becomes a rosy orange. The prairie in the foreground is a deep black. Some of the long grass stems are backlit by the photo's subject. That's a teepee, lit from the inside with a warm glow. Two silhouettes of people caught mid-motion stand just outside. The now award-winning photo is the work of South Dakota photographer Aaron C. Packard. He joined me from SDPB Studios on the USD campus to discuss it.
I got first place for lifestyle photography from the American Photographic Artists 2025 Awards, sort of their annual awards that they do.
Congratulations on that. That's a big win. That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, it's great.
And I know that artists don't and photographers don't necessarily that's not your primary focus is to probably win an award or win a prize. But what is the role of getting your art out there for people to see in a way like this, like a contest?
Well, I mean, it definitely gets me out in front of, you know, creatives that are in the more commercial advertising world and all of that. You know, it looks good on the CV for other things that I might be going for.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the image itself. because here we are in the radio. People are going to go to our website and, you know, our social media or your social media and find the picture. But paint that picture for people in words. Tell me about where you were at and what you were trying to capture.
Let's see. Well, we were out at Pine Ridge, and we were trying to capture ideas of connection and such between people, because we were working with Golden West Communications. So it's a kind of this whole communication types of ideas. And the brief on it was to have this lodge or teepee in the sunset kind of landscape, illuminated from the inside, with people. Actually, the original was to have people within it, and we did that shot, and it was fantastic and gorgeous. And then the people that we had working with us started exiting the teepee and still interacting and kind of being in this line, coming out from the light spilling from the doorway. Mm-hmm. Another fantastic moment that I ended up just loving much more than the original brief that we were doing. So yeah. I captured that, and it was just a great moment, and we hit the timing right, and just the sky worked with us amazingly that night, and we got a great fantastic shot.
Yeah, I want to talk about this because it's hard, again, without seeing it in front of you, but it's mm-hmm. not... The structure, the teepee, is illuminated from inside, but it doesn't look like it's powered from inside. Like, it doesn't, it looks very natural. It looks like the illumination is just sort of there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like it's wired for, mm-hmm. you know, like nobody's in there watching the big screen, right?
Yes. It's all movie magic.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
So, and then that color echoes the color of, as you mentioned, the sky, and then the line of grass around it. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. How in the world did you make it happen? Because technically, that is a very challenging image to
well,
set up.
Yeah. I mean, it comes from experience on how to just sort of mess or manipulate light. Mm-hmm. But, you know, basically it was just a large, very diffused light source that was placed within the teepee, and then actually there's like a generator and such hidden behind it, and you know, lots of things that you can't see in order to make that happen, and then it's just a matter of, you know, working with the ideas of exposure and getting that whole balance and color and the right kind of gels and everything to make that happen the way that you want it to happen.
How much of that is happening in the moment that you're taking the image, and how much is happening afterwards when you're adjusting things in the studio?
Yeah, actually, there's very little adjustment to that image other than just some contrast and saturation, you know, kind of the normal things that you would do. It was pretty much all done in camera. So that's the challenge to make that happen and to get it as you know, and, you know, on target, you might say, as possible in the moment.
Yeah. Take me back a little bit to some of your beginnings in photography. You grew up with artistic parents, and you originally wanted to get away from that a little bit. And yet, here you are.
Yeah. I grew up with, you know, art professor parents, actually, here at USD. And, you know, it was my attempt at rebellion as a teenager to run off and join the Navy, actually. And I did that for just about 4 years, did that whole stint, and then ended up right back in art school, pretty much. Yeah.
But what were you trying to get away from?
Oh.
Like at the time, and in your 17, 18-year-old, 19-year-old brain, what exactly were you trying to run from?
Oh, it was just
the, or toward, I guess.
I think it was just kind of coming to realize that I had only really seen one kind of section, area, idea, whatever, of culture and life and such, and wanting to see something different. I'm not sure if I needed 4 full years in the Navy to do that. But
does anyone need 4 full years?
That's true.
Some people need 20.
That's true.
Did not. What did you do in the Navy?
I was what was called an optical man, which I believe doesn't really exist anymore. But basically, I repaired submarine periscopes.
Oh. Why would that not exist anymore?
It's become all electronic and moved to different rates to the electronic techs and that kind of stuff. So
you were on sub? Did you do tours on submarines, or is that something they do in dock?
No, in dock. Yeah, I worked in.
Because it is possible at sea on top. Yeah. You're like, could be four people laugh at me and say, "No, you don't fix the periscope outside the boat when the submarine's under." But you could you could be at the surface.
Right. No, actually, repairing. I was responsible for a really big hole in the submarine. as basically a 20-year-old. So that was an interesting experience of stress.
Don't get that wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to know where to find you. if that hole that becomes a hole at sea.
Oh, yes.
So did you ever go on a submarine?
No, just repaired
really?
Them. I never had to go out on them, so.
Huh. So at that time, we're going deep into the, Aaron Packard lore now, but were you finding yourself pulled toward artistic pursuits or photography again? And once you got beyond, hey, I'm beyond my hometown, I'm beyond mm-hmm. the reach of, what my family might encourage or expect me to do, when did you know that you were an artist, that you were a photographer?
Oh, well, actually, photography, I didn't really decide to venture into photography until briefly after I got out of the military. I was really interested in acting before I went in, and I was thinking that I would kind of maybe pursue that direction or theater again. And then when I got out of the Navy, I took a job as a crew on a 120-foot schooner sailing out of Mystic, Connecticut for a year that did just basically kind of a little cruise ship passenger trade up and around Long Island Sound up to Martha's Vineyard and such. And I consider that my year as a pirate, you might say.
Yeah.
Let my hair grow, put in a big gold hoop earring, had a lot of fun. In that time, I met a New York Times photojournalist who was actually doing a story on us. And I had always done photography as kind of a side thing. And I don't know, suddenly something kind of sparked and I decided to go back to school for photography.
Interesting. And then where did you land for that?
I came back to USD for a little while and studied under John Banaschik. And I think it was 1 year. I had been here, I don't know, maybe about 2 years. And I was feeling very antsy, and I had been offered a couple of months of free rent in San Francisco. And I went in and told John, and he was like, wow, that sounds like a great idea.
And then you head to California.
And then I headed to California for 10 years.
So photography has changed a lot during that time. So,
yes.
At the time you're going, I rolled film in college for photojournalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
surely you're experiencing a huge transition in how the technology works.
Right. Well, that wasn't quite yet. I mean, this was still the early 90s. When I headed to San Francisco.
Okay.
And actually, before leaving USD, I was the photo editor of the Volant.
Nice. Yeah.
So, yeah, we did a lot of rolling of bulk film.
Yeah.
But then once I got out there, I was kind of into more art side and thought I liked fashion and such, and tried that for a while and discovered that was not my direction. And then ended up assisting for some big advertising photographers and really got into that and spent a number of years working with some really big photographers and learning how to light things and do the whole commercial end of stuff.
Yeah. What about commercial work appeals to you? I mean, other than the fact that someone will pay you to do photography, which, is not for nothing that we all need to eat, pay our rent.
Mm-hmm.
But what about it really captured you that, because you seem like the kind of guy who's going to say no if it's not appealing to him.
Yeah. It's great collaboration and working with others and really kind of getting into a team working environment that's, can be somewhat similar to, say, in the film industry, a little bit different, but you kind of get those types of crews together for commercial jobs. And that was always a really fun aspect of it for me. Of course, the getting paid for it was nice. And then the aspects of just, travel and, getting to interact with different people all the time and that kind of stuff just really kind of made it work for me.
Yeah. So watching, you know, film become, you know, digital and camera bodies even changing, now we're, of course, entering an age of a new kind of manipulation and even eliminating the photographer altogether from some clients. Tell me about why clients know that they need a real photographer with real skills in the room still. Who are the people when you're having that conversation, the people aren't, you know, the people who think, oh, we could just do this with AI, I'm less interested in. But what are you hearing from the people who are like, no, we need a commercial shoot?
Well, I mean, I think it's you know, a lot of the push for AI comes from much higher up in companies than you know, the creatives who are hopefully in the end making the decision on what directions are going. And but there's a real kind of mystery on where things are going with the industry right now. It's coming into play in so many different areas with AI kind of somewhat taking over. We're starting to see actual ad campaigns coming out that are using fully AI created images, which is, you know, a little disturbing. But then you can start to see where flaws are coming in. People are starting to realize that, okay, maybe this isn't such a great idea to be removing the human aspect of creativity from this, at least in the overall sense of it. It all comes down to the budgets and money as well. Yeah. So it just kind of depends on what happens. So I've made changes in my kind of direction over the past year because of that, and trying to not rely quite as much on the advertising end of things as I used to.
Yeah. So what would your advice be to a young person who's studying photography at USD now as far as, you know, making a good plan that will sustain a future creative business model?
Learn everything. Everything from how to process and develop film and work traditionally analog to, you know, how to use all of the AI tools that are out there as well. I mean, there's a lot of clients who are actually asking photographers for their AI portfolio.
Oh.
As well as their actual photographic work.
All right.
So it's an interesting time.
Yeah. So embrace the new.
Yes.
In a way that works for your business model.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that works for you creatively as well.
Right. Yeah.
I stay away from the AI quite a bit, especially from the actual generation image generation type side
of
it.
Right.
But I use tools that definitely use it. But you know, I'm going back to a lot of analog myself and pushing that side of it.
Yeah. Do you have photography heroes that you look to?
Oh, I mean, definitely have like some of the old masters that I definitely look towards, of, you know, Irving Penn and Avedon and you know, slightly more contemporary, or, you know, Sodek, perhaps, who's a European photographer, and you know, there's definitely some others throughout life that I worked with. You know, I was a first assistant to a guy by the name of Doug Menuhin, who spent a huge amount of his early years documenting Silicon Valley and you know, hanging out with Steve Jobs and that kind of stuff, and documenting that whole world and then moving into bigger advertising. So it was really learning from him this whole sort of putting journalistic kind of ideas of documentation into advertising work, and how to kind of create and direct within kind of that little bit more of realistic type of idea.
That's South Dakota photographer Aaron C. Packard. His photo, Intense Illumination in a Tent, won first place in the lifestyle category in the 2025 APA Awards. And that's our show for today, all about the arts in South Dakota. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by R. Youngerman and Ellen Kester. I am your host, Lori Walsh. From all of us here at STPB, we thank you for listening.